What's up, everybody? I'm Charlie Woolman.
And I'm David Todd.
Welcome to the Bucks Dugout Podcast.
Welcome to the second Bucks Dugout Podcast. I'm David Todd.
And I'm Charlie Wilmoth.
And we're going to go at it again. Charlie, how are things with you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. A disappointing performance from the Pirates last night against the Baltimore Orioles, but some good stuff from Eric Bedard. And then today they just lose a 5-4 game where they got four in the eighth and lost on a walk-off home run by Scott Poznedzik, of all people, off which I didn't even pronounce right then, off Danny Moskis. About time to break camp, Charlie. Roster battles really coming into focus. What are your thoughts on the position, guys?
Well, as before, we've got the three guys who are pretty much set at this point in McHenry and McLouth. And, boy, who's the third one?
The third one is the other side of the platoon. The other side of the platoon.
Right, exactly. So after that, I mean, the two guys, again, that have been the focus all spring have been Harrison and Haig. Michael Navarro is also in there, and he's quietly had a very good spring. I mean, he's come on strong recently. The two guys who I think make it at this point would be Navarro and Harrison, again, simply because the Pirates do like having two backup infielders. So what do you think about that? Do you think Haig has a shot at this point?
I don't, but I will tell you something you probably didn't see is in the eighth inning of today's game, Michael Navarro got hit in the forearm with a pitch, was removed from the game, and has gone to Bradenton for x-rays, as in not from McKechnie Field to downtown Bradenton to get x-rays. Likely won't be known until tomorrow. Obviously, that would impact things if it's more than just a contusion. My thoughts on Matt Haig are he has had a good spring. There were some comments by guys like Vlad, who I've got a lot of respect for, on the site saying, look, Matt Haig's ceiling is what it is, and the issue of him playing every day isn't really that big a deal because we know what kind of player he's going to be at 26. There's not a lot of developmental potential. I don't necessarily disagree with the view of what his ceiling is, but I'd rather see him go down to AAA and play every day and keep Harrison and Navarro as the two bench guys. My big concern is, does this mean Clint Barmas has to play every inning at shortstop? Because Josh Harrison did make some very good plays today at short for the Pirates, but I think consider having the idea that he's going to play even, you know, once a week might be stretching it defensively. I don't know that either of those guys is ready to do, more than a game or a few innings at a time. So I don't think that they'll need to do that. But that is my concern with those two as the backup middle infield guys.
Right. I mean, there are also lots of options if it does turn out that Barmas needs to sit for a few days. They have Darno and Mercer Chase Darno and Jordy Mercer on the 40-man roster already, so it's not going to be any real problem to call one of them up if a shortstop is needed for more than a couple of days. I would be fine with Navarro there for a couple of days, but you're right. If it gets longer than that, then they have to think about maybe making some other arrangements.
Charlie, the guy who surprised me, who wasn't in this conversation, is not Nick Evans. It's Jake Fox. Jake Fox is an interesting guy. Last spring, he hit 10 home runs for Baltimore, was kind of the bat that was talked about, but they were apparently very disappointed in his defense, particularly behind the plate, and couldn't find room for him. And this is a guy who's I don't want to call him a proven major league bat, because if you are, they'll find a place for you, or you'd be a DH in the American League. But this is a guy I thought might get a little more activity. Might be a little more front and center in the discussion. I had Rob Beertemple on ESPN 970 this morning when I was filling in for Stan Savran, and he said he felt like the Pirates were more comfortable with their guys, although Navarro doesn't really qualify as one of their guys. But he felt like Evans and Fox would go down to AAA, and he thought that it was certainly down to those three guys in the final mix.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame. I mean, Fox has been interesting to watch this spring. The at-bats I've gotten to watch him, it looks like he's rarely – I mean, you don't see players – you occasionally see players try to hit home runs, but rarely is it so obvious as it has been in some of the at-bats I've seen with Fox. But he can hit them. And you know, it's kind of a shame that the Pirates have. I mean, obviously you've got to have a catcher, you've got to have a backup infielder. But in most cases in the past few years, they've had not only those guys, but then the extra backup infielder, and that really limits what they can do in terms of having bats off the bench. I mean, I'd love to have somebody with that kind of home run power available.
That reminds me of one of my favorite all time Pirate quotes. Is they asked Matt Stairs what he thought about when he went up to the plate to hit when he was with the Pirates. And he said, I go up and try to hit it in the river every time. And it certainly looked like it when he was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. What about the bullpen battles? How do you think that's changed over the past few days?
Yeah, I think that's maybe the more interesting topic, because I really do think there are some issues there. And we've talked about who has options left and who doesn't, and how that may be a driving factor in what the decisions the Pirates make. I would think the arbitration guys are now set. Grilly was very good last night. Rysoff mm-hmm. wasn't as good when he started today, but I think those two guys are definitely going to make it. Joel Hanrahan's going to make it. And we saw a note in the paper by Beer Temple that Juan Cruz has an interesting option in his contract that's due to the new CBA, where he either makes the 40-man and the 25-man roster, which will have to be decided by March 29th, which is 2 days from today. Or if he's sent down, he gets a $100,000 payment immediately, and he'll have an opt-out piece in his contract that allows him to opt out on June 15th, much like Jason Grilly had last year with the Phillies. So I think you and I both expect Juan Cruz to make it. It looks like Tony Watson's going to be the lefty if they go north. They're certainly going to take one lefty north. So I'm going to put Tony Watson in there. And that leaves the guys we talked about, Daniel McCutchen, potentially Brad Lincoln, Jared Hughes, and Evan Meek, really, for me, as front and center. And I think at the end of the day, they're going to bring Meek north, although – you know, I wish he just felt a little elbow discomfort so that they could put him on the DL for 15 days. And then I think the last spot goes to Chris LaRue, because I think it would be just really too risky to try to roll him through waivers, because I think he has enough talent this team doesn't have enough talent, and it would be a waste to just try to get him through and possibly lose him.
Yeah, I think honestly, I'm going to go on a limb and say it would be kind of ridiculous to lose LaRue for that reason. And it seems like it, and I can't believe that's not the conclusion the Pirates will reach. And I'm surprised that's not the tenor of the discussion.
I think it is the tenor of the discussion.
Oh, okay. Well, that at least between you and I.
I think Rob felt that way in the article today, and I think most Pirate fans feel that way. I have not seen a lot of Pirate fans on Buck's Dugout looking at spring stats for the pitching staff. And certainly we'll get into Pedro Alvarez and what he's done, but we haven't, you know, it is small sample size stuff, but we also talked about it in the first podcast. It's somewhat but meaningful here for the back end guys. Their performance is a little bit relative.
Yeah, it might be somewhat meaningful, but I think that I mean, Neil Huntington talked about he talked about the option situation, the guys who are out of options and Those considerations are probably even more meaningful at this point. And the fact that they can, if they take LaRue north, they can keep somebody else like Daniel McCutchen, whereas if they do it the other way around, they can't keep both. And the fact that LaRue arguably has more upside than any of the guys we're talking about just makes it, you know, absolutely clear to me.
I think we saw that at the end of last year. He had the same conversations about guys he was taking. Josh Rodriguez made the roster. And it was wanting to keep assets in the organization. So we have precedent on that. I think I'll be shocked if it's not Chris LaRue. And if Dan McCutchen goes down, he goes down. But as I say, I think the fact that he pitched well the first half of last year is the anomaly in his career.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think he's a fine, you know, mop up man when you need an extra 25th guy on the roster. It wouldn't bother me under a lot of circumstances to have him on the roster, and I do expect him to be there at some point this year. But he's not somebody I'm going to make a priority of. What do you make so far of it?
Your guy is Jared Hughes, and you wrote about this, and certainly if he goes down, he's the guy you would expect to be the first guy called upon.
I don't know that I'm saying that I would expect that. I'm saying that I would want that. I look at Hughes and I see a guy who has the stuff, I think, to be successful as a reliever in the big leagues. Whereas I see some of the alternatives like Daniel McCutchen or Danny Moskos not really having that stuff, and I see them more as placeholders. I also look at the strikeout rate that Hughes had last year, and I compare that to the strikeout rate you can expect from McCutchen or Moskos, and it just seems like Hughes is a much better choice in a lot of seasons where the Pirates don't have as much depth, particularly from the right-handed side. I think he would be an easy choice to make the team, but this year, fortunately, actually, is not like that.
Well, let's get to the starting pitchers, Charlie. I got a chance to talk to Charlie Morton today. He told me he threw not just 55 pitches in his last four-inning outing, but he also threw 15 down in the bullpen, so he's thrown 70. He said he's good to go. He wants the ball as soon as they can give it to him. He says they've told him nothing about whether he'll be on the 25-man to start the season, whether they're going to take four starters north and an extra position player maybe, which may mean that Matt Haig and Navarro and Harrison make the club. So there are lots of things they can do because of April 15th is the first time they'll need a fifth starter. But Morton feels he's good to go. Now, and it also looks like A.J. Burnett pitched simulated game today. He threw about 50 pitches, two innings. He's going to throw three innings on Sunday. He is way ahead of schedule and certainly could be ready by that April 15th date. Where does that leave us and where do we go from here?
Well, that's all great news. And the outings that James McDonald and Eric Bedard have had have recently also been very encouraging. So that's great. I mean, the rumor leaked out of Boston.com. I think you said that the Pirates were open to trading Kevin Correa, which is wonderful. I mean, dreams are great to have. I mean, you know, whether they're going to actually be able to get that done is not really the important consideration here. I mean, they probably won't be able to, given the potential glut of fifth starter types who are better than Correa available on the market. But the fact that if there's any truth to that rumor that the Pirates would consider trading Correa, it certainly suggests that they have a high degree of confidence in Morton and Burnett at this point.
Yeah, I think that's all positive, and it certainly looks like it. I loved AJ's quote in the Pirates Insider piece that was aired yesterday, where he basically said, "When I start thinking about pitching, that's when I get into trouble. I basically got to turn and burn and let it go." And Charlie Morton did say that Burnett is – both these guys are welcome clubhouse additions. Bedard is not the stoic kind of aloof guy that he's been portrayed in the media. Certainly he comes off that way a little bit in the few things I've seen. But he said both guys have fit in very well in the clubhouse, and that's always good to hear. I guess, Charlie, if we're sitting here on April 15th and you've got six healthy starters, does Kevin Correa become a swing man in the bullpen? And if everybody else is healthy, who's the odd guy out?
I got to think it's Correa who's the odd guy out. I mean, I at this point, I just don't see the point in keeping him. I mean, maybe yeah, he's marginally better as a swing man than Dan McCutchen or something like that, but that's only a maybe, and already we don't think that Dan McCutchen is going to be on the team. So, I mean, he provides, you know, zero upside for the franchise going forward. I think you make the effort to trade him for, you know, a Class A arm or a bag of balls or whatever, and if that doesn't work, you move on. What do you think?
You know, it's a very interesting question. You have him under contract just for this year. Because of the way I think the contract was structured, it was $8 million for 2 years, but you got some of that up front. I think it's just
$3 million,
$3 million remaining this year. So it's not going to be a huge impediment financially. They'll obviously not feel good about it. But I don't see them releasing him before kind of June 1st. I think you need to get further in the season. You'd like to see Brad Lincoln make some starts in Indianapolis because, contrary to what some people have said, I don't think the Pirates have any depth of starting pitching at Indianapolis once you get past right. Brad Lincoln. Jeff Locke, Rudy Owens, none of these guys instill any confidence in me until I see him make 8 or 10 starts down there. So I think it's a difficult issue because maybe you've got – now, look, the answer is probably by the middle of April, we're going to see somebody go on the disabled list. We saw Mike Crotta. We saw Evan Meek. We saw a bunch of guys, you know, by June 1st, a bunch of Pirate pitchers had been DL'd. So there's certainly something may open up. But if it didn't, I have to think that maybe you look at sending Evan Meek down as an option guy and have him close in Indianapolis for a little while if he does end up coming north for opening day and say, look, you know, we need you to get more innings down there because you're not getting enough work. We're going to keep Correa around. And then in June 1st, if everything's going according to plan, yeah, maybe at that point you release him.
Yeah, you might be right. I mean, that might be my wishful thinking on my part, just wanting to see you know, the Pirates not pursue a sort of risk-averse strategy and instead look at the guys who have the most upside for the organization. But you're right. I mean, the fact that someone like Meek has an option does provide the Pirates with some chances to do some different things and potentially keep Correa around. If only it's just a reliever for a while, but the real reason he might stick around is to be starting depth.
Charlie, before we get to the elephant in the room, and I'm waiting purposely because we're going to try and keep these podcasts, as we said, to kind of 25 minutes or so. And if we talk about other things, maybe we'll use up all our time. But Matt Haig is a guy that we've talked about as a guy who's most likely to put a Pirate uniform on for the first time this season and make an appearance in the major leagues. I tweeted a couple weeks ago, and you responded that it's possible. Not likely, but it's possible that the Pirates, we will not see a guy make a major league debut in a Pirates uniform this year after having about 10 guys do that last year. If we discount Matt Haig and say he will do that sometime before September, are there other guys that you look to as saying it's likely they're going to make a debut in Pittsburgh?
The issue is that it's not that any one guy is all that likely, but that we are going to see some guys. That's, you know, just the way things work, the amount of roster moves that have to be made, there are going to be some guys who come up. You know, somebody from the Indianapolis bullpen, we're going to see at least a couple of those players, whether that's Justin Wilson or you know, if they have him as a starter or a reliever later in the year, or Brian Morris or somebody else. I'm not sure, but I think we will see some members of the Altoona 4 probably make their debut at this point, whereas only Locke has made his so far. Jordy Mercer, I think, is probably a good bet to make his major league debut this year. Gorky Hernandez, Starling Marte, of course, is definitely a possibility, and that's the happiest one to talk about, of course, because if he comes up, that will mean that something good has happened.
Yeah, let's talk about Starling Marte just for a second. A very interesting article on ESPN.com Insider a week or so back talking about Bryce Harper, and they have optioned him out, much to his disgruntlement, and there's a very good chance you won't see him to June. Until June. And the point of the article was, by keeping him down until June, the Nationals can get by the Super 2 window and look to save up to $10 million over the life of his contract and obviously have him for the extra year. My comment would be that if we need a fourth outfielder and it's just for a week or a couple days, the Pirates are much better served bringing up Gorky Hernandez and playing Nate McLaughlin than bringing up Starling Marte. And if Jose Tabata, Alex Presley are productive this year, I would prefer to see Starling Marte not come up at all. And I don't think there's any point of giving him a cup of coffee in September to get him major league acclimated, because we want to deal with it. If it's going to be next season, I think you want to take the approach that the Nationals have taken with Bryce Harper, unless he is clearly a dominant player. This is also assuming that the other corner outfielders are improving and performing at a level that is a major league level that the Pirates are comfortable with. I think they want to take it slow with Starling Marte, and that's very different than the conversation. I think it's been a little bit of a straw man argument this spring that Marte should make the team. I don't think anybody really believes that. But unless there is a catastrophic injury and one of the Pirate outfielders is out for kind of a month or 6 weeks, I think Gorky Hernandez is the guy you want to see come up rather than Starling Marte.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, you'd like Marte to perform well enough, and maybe this is wishful thinking on my part again, but you'd like him to perform well enough that he really forces the issue and makes us say, well, you know, we don't really have a space for him right now, but you know, at some point, if a guy is just destroying AAA, then you know, it's not good for him to just continue staying there. And you have to find a space for him, whether that's, you know, moving some people around in order to find, you know, at-bats for him, you know, 3 games out of every 5 or something like that. But, yeah, I mean, we'd have to see him really hit well at AAA for that to happen first.
Yeah. Before, as we get to our closing point here, Pedro Alvarez has been an incredible disappointment in Bradenton thus far. He's had roughly, after going 1-for-4 with 3 strikeouts today, he's had roughly 40 at-bats, and he's struck out, you know, 35% of the time, 40% of the time with, you know, 15 or 16 strikeouts.
I think it's 18, actually.
18 strikeouts.
Yeah, it's almost half, yeah.
So we're closing in on 50%, numbers that, you know, are appallingly bad. And nobody can argue that Pedro's done anything positive here this spring. Neil Huntington has said he's coming north. He said he's going to be the starting third baseman. I think the Pirates in their first 10 or so games face 5 really difficult lefties in Cliff Lee, Clayton Kershaw. Capuano's not the most difficult lefty, but they've got a couple more in there in that mix that they're going to face, Cole Hamels being one of them.
Right.
So there's a chance maybe in the first 10 games he only plays 5 times or he plays 6 times. You have written some different things about where you think he should be and what you think should happen. Why don't you just clarify it one more time for us here on the podcast?
I don't know. I don't know what should happen. And I guess what I'm saying about this is that in order to feel confident making a diagnosis here, I'd have to know Pedro. I'd have to know what's going on with him. But based on what we know from the outside, here's what I would say. If you know, he's again become the focus of attention this spring, and we really saw that on Monday night when the game was televised and everything on Twitter was about Alvarez, Alvarez, Alvarez. And you know what? If he goes 0-for-4 in the first game this season, he's going to come out the second game and people in PNC Park are going to boo him. Now, I know he's a big boy. He can take the boos, but it could become a really negative environment for him really fast. And so the question for me is, you know, is it better to send him down to AAA now, let him, you know, because he it's not that he doesn't look like he can figure out major league pitching at this point. It's not like a matter of like subtle distinctions between major league pitchers and AAA pitchers and Pedro's figured out AAA pitchers, but he doesn't know what to do against major league pitchers. It's that he doesn't look like he knows what to do against any kind of pitchers who can throw the ball anywhere near the strike zone, or you know, have any sort of command. He looks to me like he would probably struggle against class AA or class AAA hitters pitchers right now. So, you know, the question is, can you send him down to class AAA now, let him get back whatever he had before, whatever he showed in 2010 when he first came up, and you know, try to you know, make sort of a comeback in a quieter environment, and then hopefully let some of the buzz about him die down, and then let him come up and make his major league debut this year in June or July. Would that be a better solution for him, or is it better to throw him in the fire right now and see what you've got? And it seems like the latter is what the Pirates have chosen, and that seems really dangerous to me.
Yeah, I don't know that there'll ever be a time when the buzz isn't there around him. If he's down in AAA, at whatever point they decide to give him another opportunity, the buzz is going to be loud, maybe not quite as loud because it won't be coming off such a horrendous stretch as he's gone through right here at the end of spring training.
I think it might also reduce expectations a little bit, too. If he's sent down to AAA for a while, the Pirates fans might see him a little bit differently at that point.
Interesting idea. Certainly possible. Rob Beertemple referred to the battle here as not a battle of hitting stroke or anything else. It's the battle for Pedro's soul and very much his own issues with it. I wrote that I think he should play virtually every day until June 1st, maybe even a little bit more than that. Get 200, 250 at bats and see where we stand. I'm going to stick by that. It may end up being the wrong decision for the Pirates' success this year. I don't think it's the wrong decision in terms of his overall development. I don't think that he is going to be impacted that greatly if he's not successful and goes down on June 1st than if he started the season down there. There are clearly issues. If he can't get resolved 2 months at the major league level, they're going to have to make a decision at some point here in the future, and they do have the option left for the whole season so they can send him down there. So I'd like to roll the dice a little bit. Obviously, the Pirates are going to roll the dice a little bit and give him an opportunity to do it, but certainly it's incredibly important. But as I said last night, I think Pirate fans should recognize, as important as Pedro is to the long-term health of the franchise, and we get it beaten down over our head and down our throats every day virtually by somebody in the media telling you how important Pedro is. I'll just make a simple statement that I think both Eric Bedard and A.J. Burnett are going to be more impactful in terms of the number of games the Pirates win this year, unless Pedro were to hit, you know, 310 with a 480 slugging percentage. Those guys, if they can go out and give the Pirates 200 innings each and give them quality starts, 28, 30 quality starts over the course of the year, that's going to be much more important for the Pirates to get to 81 wins than almost anything Pedro does.
Yeah, of course, the consideration with Pedro goes beyond this year, whereas with the pitchers, you know, not so much. But you're right. I mean, the difference between Bedard and Burnett staying healthy and pitching as we think they can throughout the year, versus, you know, Correa and Lincoln or somebody worse than that making those starts is potentially enormous. And you're probably right that ultimately, if those two pitchers can stay healthy, that can make an enormous difference in the Pirates' season.
And I think what we'll see is it's going to be difficult for the Pirates starting staff to do as well as they did in the first 100 games last year. We saw Ross Ohlendorf go down in his second start, and then nobody missed a start until about the end of July. And at that point, they were resting Charlie Morton a little bit to manage his innings, which they also did with James McDonald. They had to do it with Jeff Karstens, and they disabled Correa and Mahalam. And so I think what you're not going to see is you might not see the exceptional starting pitching that they got the first 100 games, but there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that they'll be better than what they got the last 60 games because it was a disaster. They were rolling out Aaron Thompson and Jeff Locke and Brian Burris, and the names that got a chance to start games were just crazy. So if these guys can continue to take a step forward and Ray Searidge can work his magic, this is what's going to make this team, I think, competitive for me, because I still don't think the bats are there, and we need to see the left fielder, the right fielder, the second baseman take big steps forward if the Pirates are going to score runs and be competitive on that side of the ball.
Yeah, you're right, and you've done well to put it in perspective here. I mean, the entire fan base is kind of freaking out about Pedro at this point, but it's not just about him. There's 24 other guys as well, and you're right that the pitching could turn out to be just as important, if not more important.
All right, Charlie, the only other things I have are Steve Pearce was released today by the Minnesota Twins, 28 years old. John Grabo asked for his release, and it was granted by the Cubs. We know Mike Gonzalez is out there. So a bunch of Bucks ex-Buccos out there on the waiver wire. If you were just going to take a gut feel guess, there's been rumors the Pirates are going to look for backup catching for left-handed relievers. Do you expect at the end of last year they picked up Garrett Olson, which seemed like a reasonably good acquisition, and he stayed with within the organization for the whole year. Do you expect Neil Huntington to do something between now and April 1st?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not sure any of these former Pirates will be involved. I mean, I've heard a couple of people suggest that Grabo could be the answer to the left-handed relief situation, which I just don't see at all. I'd rather have most of the options the Pirates already have. But you know, the fact that they haven't already picked up somebody like Gonzalez, and you know, it's only a few days before camp breaks, might suggest that they're going to go with who they have, but you know, these last few days will be critical.
All right. Well, I think that wraps things up for the second edition of the Bucks Dugout podcast. Remember, you can follow Charlie at Bucks Dugout. You can follow me on Twitter at DT on Pirates. And as always, we'll catch you around the Bucks Dugout community, bucksdugout.com.